Richmond Art Museum in Richmond, Indiana, I'm Kate Jetmore. Today I'm joined by Greg Hull, Dean of the Heron School of Art and Design at IU Indianapolis and member of the Indiana Arts Commission. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you, Kate. I really appreciate your time. We're excited to have this conversation.
Me too. I understand that you are a graduate of Richmond High School, and I recently learned that your work is featured in the McGuire Hall Auditorium mural. So what did it mean to you to participate in that project, both as an artist and as a Richmond native?
Thank you. And it was really engaging. I graduated from Richmond High School in 1981, and so I was really excited that my work was included in the mural in McGuire Hall. And it was also really exciting because the artist who made the mural, who made all the murals, Amy Reinhardt, was a former student of mine at Heron School of Art and Design. And so it was really exciting. And they had some murals that had images of people, but in the panel one mural, it has two works of art of mine. And so I was making these, I put a number of these, like eight of these really large paper airplanes up in Richmond, and they were made out of plywood, and I added hinges to them so they could be folded and unfolded. And so those are included in the image. And also I was making these different works of art with kinetic umbrellas, setting them in motion. So this umbrella is included in that. So that was exciting. But for me, it was really exciting because I remember sitting in the auditorium, and it was, well, I always enjoyed going in there for lectures, but also for performances and sometimes seeing art. Mm-hmm. And the idea that my work is now part of that is really, it's exciting. It's like part of my life going full circle is really exciting. And thinking about high school students that are there now and in that space and getting to see that work, that's been a really positive part of this. Yes.
Yeah, I can hear the excitement in your voice, and I can also understand it. And I just want to circle back to what you were saying about Amy Reinhardt's work as the muralist and how your work is included in that mural. So what you're saying is that you had two, what I would think of as installations, art installations in Richmond, that Amy was inspired to include in her mural. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is. And actually, one of them was from a piece that I had at the Indiana State Museum. And
She'd seen
other examples of these kinetic umbrella pieces I'd made. And I'd had these airplanes at different places in the state, but they were at IU East. So
okay. Can you actually, Greg, would you mind sharing with us more about those two pieces?
Yeah, absolutely. So, with the airplanes, growing up, my father was occasionally a pilot, and so I used to think how interesting it was because when you'd make a paper airplane and throw it, often you would feel like you were flying. And so to me, paper airplanes were an exciting way just to talk about creativity, and so that was exciting. And and making these larger ones I thought was really important too, and in part because of the history of airplanes and growing up, and also I'd been able to create a memorial for Amelia Earhart, and so being able to have those connections with flight were exciting to me, but also to have the audience look at it and be able to sort of remember when they flew for the first time, when they threw a paper airplane. And so
sure.
And then with the umbrellas, I was in New York City visiting my sister when she lived in New York City, and I was looking out the window of her apartment, and I didn't realize it was raining. I started to see these umbrellas opening, and they looked like flowers blooming, and then I realized, oh, it's raining. But so when I got back to my studio back in Indiana, I was trying to open and close umbrellas like that so I could see them, but my arms weren't long enough, so I put motors on them so they could open and close. And I thought it was really engaging because as they opened and closed, it seemed to impact how I breathe faster or slower, depending on the motion. And so I started working on different projects to do that. And I have a piece at the Indianapolis Airport called Breath, where there's 11 of these large double umbrella forms. They open and close at the rate of relaxed human respiration. They're meant to help people travel and to relax. And so that was one of the things that I was really interested in, just keeping those moving and creating these forms. And in the mural, it's actually sort of a sphere that's made out of multiple red umbrellas, and that was another project that I did.
Wow, thank you so much for describing that. I'd love to talk more about your work, but let's turn actually to The Richmond Art Museum, which, as you know, in October will be hosting the annual exhibition. The juried show is in its 127th year, making it the oldest in the state of Indiana. What can you share with us about how juried shows are organized and their importance and long tradition in Indiana?
Absolutely. And it is really exciting. And 127 years, it's really remarkable. And I was very fortunate. I got to be a juror for the 125th year, which was really special.
And, okay.
And having been in the show, but also having seen the show since before I went to high school was really impactful. And mm-hmm. I remember, my mother was a speech therapist, and she painted every day. She's a plein air painter. So I assumed everyone made art every day, and that's kind of how I got into the arts, which was exciting. And I used to go to the Richmond Art Museum before I went to high school, so I'd seen a lot of shows there. And then, when I was in high school there, I would leave other classes to head to my art classes and to connect with Paulina Ronald and my art teacher. And and so on the way to the classroom, we'd go through the museum every day. And so that was really exciting and really inspiring. And so that was just the background. But those exhibitions have been really impactful. And I think sometimes exhibitions have sort of specific goals outlined, but often they don't. And so the jurors are kind of working to create a really strong show. So the jurors are actually also they're working to curate the show. So they're picking the work that comes across as being very engaging, but also work that relates to other work that's already being selected. And that was something I try and communicate with artists sometimes, because sometimes there's really wonderful work that wasn't able to be in the show, but it could be in a different show. And sometimes people say, different day, different juror, different selections. But sometimes it's different body of work, different work will be in the show. And so, but that's been exciting. And that's sort of an addition to my training as an artist, and also my training as a faculty member to work with students and to sort of evaluate. And I do that work also with other types of proposals, but it's exciting to get to do it with art, because that's, in some ways, feels more hands-on. You get to be deeply immersed, and it is exciting. But again, it's not just that you're evaluating each individual piece of art. You're trying to put together an exhibition that has a really wonderful, deep connection. And it's not that the work all needs to be the same. It actually needs to have a really good breadth of really wide array of engaging things. Mm-hmm. And
is there a sort of declared unifying theme each year for the annual exhibition, or is it something that's sort of agreed upon among the jurors, or is it unspoken?
And for this exhibition, the 127th, and I think over time, there hasn't been a specific sort of topic that's going to be the focus, but sometimes when jurors are looking at the work, they get to see all the work before they begin to select what work will be in there. So they start to get an idea of what the show could be. And so in that moment, really the intent is to support the artists and to also help raise awareness of some of the strongest work, but also to try and make the show itself really impactful. So it's about how to pull the work together to make that a really engaging show. And that's why I said sometimes there's work that you would like to have included, but you couldn't because it didn't make sense with the show. So,
right. Do you find that in a sort of organic way, the work each year is a reflection of what we're sort of going through in our world or in our culture? Or is the style a little more kind of classical and timeless?
I see it actually in both areas. So there is some work that is referencing sort of traditional art methods, but sometimes with cutting edge materials. And so that's exciting to combine, thousands of years of history in that, which is what the arts do. And so I think that's really engaging. And often, I've seen a lot of work in those shows that are sort of showing landscapes, but it isn't just the traditional work that is sort of part of like the Indiana artists, but that also talks about the communities that we're in and the spaces we're in. And sometimes when you look at that work, you see that you're seeing something from the past. So it's like time travel. Sometimes it's something that's brand new. And so it expands on that. And and often it's about creating work. This is true for paintings and other work too, but work that is engaging, that invites the viewers to sort of enter into the image and sort of move around it. And I think this is true of all artwork, three-dimensional and two-dimensional artwork and time-based work, that as as the viewer looks at it, if they look more carefully, they'll discover something. And as they discover it, it will reveal other things. And so I used to always think that work would be the most successful if it had a longer conversation with the audience. And so those are things that I look for, too.
Yeah. One more question just on the part of the, you know, your perspective as a as someone who has participated as a juror, technically speaking, how many jurors are there each year, and is it a consistent number?
Well, some years there's a single juror, and for the 125th year, I appreciate this, when Sean Dingsworth reached out to see if I would be the juror for the 125th year, that was really exciting, and so I was very grateful for that. But then I learned that that more than 90% of the artwork would be paintings. And it's because I still really enjoy painting, but my background being in sculpture, I thought it'd be really helpful to bring in a painter. So Carol Ann Carter, was a 1970 graduate of Heron, somebody who I met. She's moved back now to Indianapolis, so it's great to connect with our alumni. Mm-hmm. So invited her to join me. So she and I juried the show, the exhibition together, which was great because we got to have conversations in different ways about the artwork.
Sure.
And getting to see things through multiple perspectives is always engaging. Yeah. And I think that's also important in the arts because, you know, sort of seeing things through multiple perspectives is something that is very valued in the arts. So, yes.
Yeah, for sure. And so would you say that's pretty typical that there's either one juror or two jurors?
There can be. And I think there may have been some times there were more, but I also am familiar. Sometimes there have been a single juror. And it wasn't just because there was a lot of work. I just thought that it would be helpful to have somebody who had a different sort of history and experience with two-dimensional work, since
right.
most of my work had been in, my own personal work had been in 2D and 4D, or 3D and 4D.
Right.
But being in school and, drawing and painting have always been things that I really valued, so I'm okay being the juror, but I thought that would be helpful and engaging. So
yeah, I'll bet that was. Well, you've participated in the annual exhibition as both artist and juror. And I'd love to get kind of an inside look. You've referred a little bit to your experience as a juror, but what can you share about the benefits of participating in the show as an artist?
Well, thank you. And yes, when I was in my first exhibitions that were juried, I didn't get into all of them, but I sometimes felt like, well, if it had been a different juror, they would have selected it. But then sort of started to see the opportunities and started to better understand the full scope of what the exhibition was doing and enjoyed going to see the shows even if my work wasn't in it. And and it wasn't like that was frustrating. It sometimes encouraged me to go back to the studio, but that always happened anyway. And even when my work was included, I would see things in my work I'd like to change, so I'd get back to the studio. But I think it's been really exciting, and I think that's still really true, that artists get to be in a show together and become part of that community that is made within the show. And that's really valuable, and being able to contribute to that has been really positive. And this doesn't always happen, but I used to really value it when I could speak to the juror, if my work was included or even if it wasn't, to be able to have a conversation and sort of to have an opportunity to learn. And I always like saying this, we're all here to teach and learn, so yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always really valuable. So when I do jury a show, I try and make sure I'm available to talk to people. And so if they've got questions, I'm happy to discuss how things had evolved with them, and I think that's helpful. But and so I was also fortunate because my mother had been a juror, and so I got to sort of see how she did that, and that was helpful. But and I was also fortunate because in a lot of ways, because of my background in education, I also understood how to kind of manage those sort of spaces, and because I've been fortunate to work with our gallery team at our school for 27 years, have a better understanding now than I did before I started teaching about the way shows come together, and not just the perspective from a single artist, but sort of the perspective from multiple artists and from the jurors and the community, because we're also thinking about the audience and how to engage them. And so, yes.
Yeah. You know, as a person who's not a visual artist and not a member of a jury on one of these shows, it's so interesting to get a little peek into what the experience is like, because I do love going to shows, going to galleries, going to museums, but when I do, I don't find myself face to face with the artist or a member of the jury. And so to hear you talking about, you know, meeting the other artists who are also in the show, or talking to the juror about what they saw in your work or what they didn't see in your work or what they hope to see next year, that's so exciting. It's very dynamic and very there's a whole nother dimension there that a person like me is not seeing or perceiving.
Oh, I see. Well, and some part of my background was in installation art, which was not just making an object or a two-dimensional surface, it was creating an experience where people would enter a space and sort of not just make sure that I was presenting work so that as they moved through the space, it would add on to that. And so that lent itself as well to the way I think about two-dimensional and three-dimensional work that I do. And so,
okay. Well, it's one thing I hear you saying is that the human, whether that human is the viewer or the artist or even the juror, is very much an actor in your pieces. You know, you talked about the rate of human breathing and how we can even affect that through art, how the art affects our breathing. I don't know if you've done it, and now I'm starting to think, oh, what about a piece where the breathing affects the art? I mean, there's a give and take there, you know?
I have made work like that if you breathe, it'll project an image on the wall.
Oh, wow.
And, well, I got into that work and extended it because I was working with our school's art therapy program, and so was very fortunate to get an opportunity to do a project called the Transformational Impact Fellowship. But I got to work with an art therapist and the head of neurology at the IU Neuroscience Center, and we worked with his patients that were navigating ALS.
Wow.
And because those patients couldn't use traditional art-making tools, I started making tools where we could use eye tracking. So as they looked at the wall, they were actually drawing on the wall because I could project on the wall and follow their eyes as they breathed.
Wow.
I could pull data from their breath and change the color and size of the marks. But that was exciting to me in part because, I'd learned that more than 100 years ago, there were paintings in a city hospital in Indianapolis by some artists who happened to be faculty at our school at the time at Heron. And the murals were sitting really high on the wall. When I first saw them, I thought, why are they so high? And then I realized, oh, because they're meant to be looked at if you're laying in a bed. And so
Wow. That
was exciting to me that more than 100 years ago, the hospital and the artists saw the value that the arts bring to healing and to health and well-being.
Mm.
So I got excited about that. And then getting to work with those patients and to give them control was really exciting, really engaging. And I would be projecting on the wall in a lab with them, with an art therapist and with a neurologist. But then every once in a while, I'd get to, we'd have these research events where the family and the patients would come in to get updates on the research that was happening relative to the disease they were navigating.
Right.
And so occasionally they let me project their artwork on the outside of the building, and they would be then as videos. So
wow.
You could sort of see the artwork being made, which meant giving, I really appreciate this, the hospital gave control of the hospital to the patient.
Yes, yes.
That was important.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Greg, it's so great to get to know you and to learn more about you as a person, you as an artist, and definitely your relationship to the Richmond Art Museum. So thank you so much for being here today.
It's really a pleasure. And Richmond has been a really important part of my life and my experience. I've been really fortunate to have grown up in that area and have a lot of experiences, both in sort of the rural community around Richmond, but also in the city, but also at Earlham College. And I was really fortunate to do that. And there's really amazing history of the arts there. And while the arts I'm referencing maybe more based on music and the first live audience to see a motion picture happened in Richmond, Indiana as well. And these were exciting things to realize were part of the history. And so I always felt
For
like it
sure.
was our job as artists to contribute to that history. So, yes.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Greg.
Well, thank you. It really was a pleasure. Thank you.
For the Richmond Art Museum, this is Kate Chetmore.